This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. Today's podcast is being recorded in the offices of Raider Solutions. Raider creates and maintains technical strategies for businesses of all sizes across the country, functioning as their complete IT department. Raider's motto is, "You just want it to work, we understand." If you're wondering if Raider can help your business, please visit RaiderSolutions.com. Today's guests are John and Becky Williams, owners of Pack and Paddle, founded in 1974 by John's parents, Joan and Doc Williams. John and his wife Becky purchased Pack and Paddle in 1999. Pack and Paddle is the place to get information and get fitted properly for all types of outdoor pursuits. They're also a resource for the local forests, swamps, marshes, and streams that make Louisiana a special place for the outdoor enthusiast. And I want to say personally, I'm very grateful to both John and Becky for taking time today. We've enjoyed Pack and Paddle through my family for many years, and I'm looking forward to learning more about your business and what you love about South Louisiana. Welcome to Discover Lafayette.
Thanks for inviting us.
Yeah. So I don't know who wants to go first. Maybe John, talking about your parents starting Pack and Paddle and growing up in that industry of outdoor pursuits.
Right. Well, it is interesting. The business started when I was 13, and my dad is a children's dentist, a pedodontist, and my mom had a Girl Scout troop, and they wanted to get some canoes for the Girl Scout troop and decided, oh, let's try to get them wholesale, and they had to buy 12. So, of course, they went out to all their friends and said, hey, let's
get some
together.
Paddles.
And, yeah, well, let's get together and
because they're not cheap.
Back then, I'm sure they were $300 or $400 back
right.
then. But anyway, that's sort of how the business started. And
was your mom a business person or
not at all?
She was a housewife.
Well, you know, I would say she is because it does run in our family. Mm-hmm. She's a Montague from St. Martinville.
Okay.
And her mom's side is the Biard family, and
so that, they are business.
And
yeah.
So they were in all sorts of businesses, uh-huh. including a hot sauce business called Evangeline Hot Sauce.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I think the business roots go way back for mm-hmm. sure.
So she bought 12 canoes. I'm assuming that your dad didn't kill her because she couldn't sell them. She must have had a spark of interest. So, so she started Pack and Paddle back in 1974. And the original location was where, John?
The original location was on Pinhook, but uh-huh. it was right next to the river where the Hilton sits, right next to, if you remember, Poor Boys Riverside
right.
Inn,
right.
Right next to that on the river next to the bridge.
So what did she sell besides canoes? Like, what did she have in the business?
Well, the building was very small, so we didn't have a whole lot. And mm-hmm. What we had was tents, sleeping bags, hiking boots, shorts, basically what you would need to go hiking or canoeing.
Anything a Girl Scout then. Might need.
Yeah. In fact, it was, you know, one of the funny stories is it was so small, and this is a great retail story, but it was so small, if you came in and you wanted to buy a pair of shorts and you wanted to try them on, mm-hmm. What you were told to do was to go out the back door and go in the shed in the backyard to try on your shorts.
So you didn't embarrass
yourself.
That's how
we did it.
Yeah, but it worked.
Yeah, it worked.
Yeah.
It definitely worked. For sure.
And I know from other guests I've had on the podcast that area of town in 1974 was not really considered mainstream Lafayette. We talked about some restaurants, Cafe Vermilionville, and I know even in the late 70s there wasn't a lot of business going down Pinhook, so that was probably a great location for her being on the river.
Well, you know? The river was, we didn't actually access the river that much. We had the canoes on a trailer, but it was sort of the edge of town.
Country.
If you think about it,
right.
If you went across the bridge, and the bridge at that time was only a two-lane road.
Right.
And
it was affordable.
Exactly. So if you went across the bridge, you were headed to Broussard, and you were sort of out in the country back then.
So you grew up with a mom by the time you were in high school. She was full-time running Pack and Paddle?
Yep. Yep, full
That's
time.
So cool.
And but you know, sometimes she would just leave us in there and go do her thing. And another story she told us the other day was One of her friends came, I know, that would be great. One of her friends came in and said, what kind of crazy place is this? I walk in and there's like a 10-year-old kid sitting there and there's only one keeping the shop.
It worked out.
It was definitely formative, uh-huh. I'll say that.
You know, this is an aside. I'm a little bit older than you, but I got hired to work at a pool supply store in the 70s, and we didn't have a swimming pool. We didn't have any money, and I was hired to work on Saturdays, and I didn't know anything about the chemicals and all. And I asked the lady that owned it, and she goes, don't worry about it. I mean, it was so relaxed back then, you know, and I'm sure you could do what she needed to do, and your mom trusted you.
But, you know, we were sort of, I don't know, growing up in a family business is a little different.
Yeah.
You know, because we wanted to do our own thing, but we had to work.
You had to help your parents.
And everybody, I have four other siblings, so all of us worked in the business.
Okay. Are they still here, John, or your siblings?
Four of the five are in Lafayette.
Are they involved with y'all, Becky, and the business?
We're the only ones left.
Okay.
We're the last people standing, right?
Yeah. No,
all of our siblings have gone other directions. Okay. So, yeah.
So you had told me that your mom relocated Pack and Paddle in 1976 to its current location. It's still on Pinhook, but now it's right off of Evangeline Thruway, which is a very busy corridor for travelers and all. So how was that move? Was that the building that we're looking at now? Is that the original look of the structure, or has it grown?
The structure has grown. It got added onto twice, and it does look the same, basically.
Yeah, but it's very rustic.
But it beautiful. It's longer. It was, do you remember the name of Al Landry, I think, the architect from New Iberia, designed the original building.
Uh-huh.
And it was added onto a couple of times, but it basically looks just the same.
Right. So you, a personal aside, you and Becky were married August 4th, 1984, and I was very impressed that he knew the exact date, Becky. And then you purchased the business from your parents in 1999. And so did you know coming up that you wanted to be an outdoorsman, to work in the business, or was this like an evolution?
I think it was an evolution. You know, growing up, we loaded canoes, we wrapped presents, we helped people in the store. We did every different thing. But I don't think any of the five of us wanted to do that.
It's like being the son of a car dealer or something. You just grow up in it.
Right. Yeah. And you grow up in it. And but the thing, I can't speak for my other siblings, but as far as for me, I've always loved the outdoors a lot, and I know they have too, but for us it's been a special part of our life, and there's a lot of reasons that we still do this.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the key for us wanting to do this long term is two things: loving the outdoors and wanting to connect people in the local area to the outdoors.
Right. And I've got some questions for that in a few minutes. Becky, I want to get your thoughts. First of all, when you married John, were you thinking that your career would be focused on outdoor pursuits?
I don't think I was thinking back then. Mm-hmm. I was 18 years old.
He's kind of cute.
Having fun.
Yeah.
He's cute.
Very nice, I might add.
And it was fun. It was like a dream for me. Going sailing. At that time, we had a lot of Hobie Cats and windsurfing.
Wow.
And that's what I was really, really enjoyed. They owned a Pack and Paddle in Lake Charles.
Okay.
And that's where I met him. That was in 1984.
You grew up in
Lake Charles.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice, yeah. I remember going back, I guess, to the 80s and 90s, my husband likes to ski. And I know we could always come into your place, and we're going to get into South Louisiana pursuits, but from early days that I remember shopping at Pack and Paddle, we could come in and get gear for just about anything, not just outdoor kayaking and hiking, but I would come in and buy socks and, you know, warm clothes and all. So were you always focused on any type of outdoor pursuit, or was that something that you and Becky evolved into?
I guess you could look at the arc of the business. When it started, it was outdoor gear, hiking, paddling. And then Lafayette was, you know, Lafayette was booming. It was a boom town.
People were going to Colorado.
People were going to Colorado. They were sending their clients, you know. So adding ski wear, adding ski equipment, all that was sort of natural. And,
right.
You know, all shopping was local back then. There really wasn't. Exactly. I guess there was a few mail order catalogs, but there was no internet.
Well, they had L.L. Bean, but then you don't know how it fits.
Yeah.
You know?
And, I mean, it just wasn't nearly as prevalent.
Right.
So, you know, as things grew, it was easy for the business to expand to, mm-hmm. into other areas.
Because we went there with the girls. We were bringing our little people as they aged. You know, they would just get new suits there and, mm-hmm. and all kinds of outdoor gear.
Right. And I mean, I you know, we hear every day we have people come in, oh, I bought a bike here. Oh, mm-hmm. I learned to ski over here. Or, you know, there's all
right.
all those stories. You know, where we find ourselves in 2018 is that we're sort of back to the future because retail has changed so much.
It really seems like it's changed overnight. For me, like the two to five years is overnight for a business to shift.
I would say the shift is a lot longer than 2 to 5 years, but it's probably just that you're noticing it.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew even back in the 90s that we were going to have to be even more specialized than what we were. You know, we were trying to do Hobie Cats and windsurfers and skis and outdoor. And
that's not really centric to the local.
Well, if you think about it, if you think about being a specialty retailer, mm-hmm. okay, if you're an enthusiast and you're into paddling and you want your store to be important to you, you would want them to have enough room in the store to have a wide selection. You'd want them to
right.
have employees that were specialized in that area.
Experienced, yeah.
You'd want them maybe to offer events and trips mm-hmm. and things that evolved around that. And can you do that in 8 different areas?
Mm-hmm.
Well, and when, you know, with the way retail has gone, becoming more and more specialized, we felt like we needed to take the business and pare away some of the things and get back to the original roots of what the business was.
What your mom was looking at, local needs. Huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, what people could do locally here.
Right. And so I want to give a shout out to another podcast, It's Acadiana, that I know you were on, John, and Aileen Bennett was asking you about that. And your website, it's beautiful, and it talks about your love of the outdoors, but you really do focus on South Louisiana, and you also focus on the customer service, like the direct experience. Is that right with your customers? So can you talk about that? Like, you've had to make a decision. We're not just going to be selling stuff and shipping it mm-hmm. nationally. You actually help customers figure out what do they need, how do things work,
yeah.
and what's the best solution for them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sure. I think that again, back to focus mm-hmm. and emotional energy and time and what can a single person do in a day and
right.
still have a lifestyle that's worth living.
Right.
And what we realized, Becky and I, not only have we done Pack and Paddle, but we also ran an internet business for almost 8 years. And we were shipping stuff all over the world and had we were bought out by a company in California. But
okay.
So it's something that we know how to do. It's something that we've done, but it's something that with Pack and Paddle we purposely mm-hmm. did not want to do. And the reason was that we wanted to make Pack and Paddle as hyper local as it could be.
Right.
And make it to where when people came to Pack and Paddle, they knew that we were going to have the space and time to be able to have the right employees, have the right events, and
right.
offer the things that people want to do when they're here.
So now you focus on South Louisiana. Is that correct? Or maybe mm-hmm. Louisiana? Or do you focus more on the southern region where we are?
I would say, I do think that a big part of our focus is local as far as like the customer base. Obviously, mm-hmm. we're not selling online. We're mm-hmm. focusing on people who walk in the store. But as
no matter
far
where
as
they go,
the
yeah.
activities and where people go to do these things,
uh-huh.
it could be anywhere. One of the things that Becky's done the last couple of years is to do the Camino. And she's
in
done...
In Spain.
Oh, my gosh. That's wonderful.
I don't know if you want to talk about that.
Yeah.
But I'm putting you on the spot. But anyway, it's just an example. She's like, huh? But
Well, it is a wonderful experience that I think a lot of people have interest in. So I decided to do a talk at Pack and Paddle. Mm-hmm. You know, for everybody can do it, men, women, but I find that a lot of women in my situation, their kids are gone, are really interested in going to do overseas travel.
And a personal adventure.
And a personal adventure, exactly. Yeah. I planned it and did it on my 50th birthday.
That's great.
So, just for me to kind of go out and see who I was on my own.
Let John stay home and walk the dog. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And I did a talk at Pack and Paddle, and I think there's maybe 80 people
that
came out.
That many showed up?
Yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. I think there's a lot of interest in that. So it's not just South Louisiana. Mm-hmm. That is where we spend most of our time and our love. But also, you know, we travel places.
Right.
Colorado, the Grand Canyon, the Buffalo River. We do a talk about canoe camping on the Buffalo River. And
you like fishing?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Fly fishing when you go to Colorado? Or
fly fishing here in Colorado.
Uh-huh.
Fishing has become a sort of a big part of Pack and Paddle as well, because it fits so well with kayaking.
Right.
And also because South Louisiana and our coastal marshes are sort of an epicenter for being able to go out and catch redfish out of a kayak.
And that seems like it'd be difficult, like you've got limited space, but
actually it's very easy.
It's easy.
The reason we're an epicenter for catching redfish out of a kayak is that it's one of the easiest places to come and do it.
That's great.
We have tons and tons of redfish, and they're big, and they're hungry, and they're not choosy. So
where do people go for that? What's the best spot, or is there one best spot?
There's a lot of spots all along the coast, but all the way from Big Lake on the west.
Yeah.
Side to you know, during the fall, Sycamore Point is a great spot, to all the spots below Houma, which would be places like Cocodrie and Bayou du Large
on a kayak,
Pointe aux Chênes, and places like that. Yeah, in a kayak, because if you think about it, most places, if you're going to go coastal fishing, you got to paddle out through the surf, and it might be real choppy, and the tide might pull you way out. Well, if you're in the marsh, you're enclosed. The water's shallow, so there's not a lot of motorboats running around.
It's safer.
You're protected from the wind. There's no chop. I mean,
I've never fished from a kayak. I'm showing again my ignorance.
It's very peaceful too. Mm-hmm. I mean, in these shallow marshes, you often don't see anybody else. So it's
beautiful, a
solitude experience.
Absolutely.
Do tourists come to do that? Like, who is your typical customer for fishing? Is it visitors, or is it local people that depend on you to give them guidance?
Well, our main customers are local people. Mm-hmm. We do have people come from out of town and even out of state that want to go and kayak fish in the marsh.
But your typical client, I guess you would help, would be like my family. We're saying we want to do something, staying close to home.
Yes.
And we could just rent everything we needed from you?
You could, in fact, we offer trips. So what you could do is you can just sign up for a trip.
Uh-huh.
And basically we bring all the stuff. You can even rent a rod and a reel and a lure kit and show up down there, and we bring the boat and the paddle and the life jacket and the gear, and we get out and put you in the boat, and we go out in the marsh and we'll fish all day.
What if you're not like an experienced, you know, fisherman or fisherwoman? Do you help people, or do you need people to kind of know what they should be doing?
No, we help. We keep the group sizes. We'll have no more than three people.
So you can help them with the bait and everything, or the lures?
Right. And people can choose to either use lures or use bait, either way. And they have fun. Even beginners can catch fish most of the time.
And then when they're done, do you help them clean up or pack up? Like, it's a complete experience?
Yeah, pretty much. As far as cleaning the fish, sometimes we'll clean the fish. If someone asks us to clean the fish, we'll usually clean the fish for them.
Do you have a favorite place, Becky, that you like to fish?
I'm not quite the fisherman that John is. Uh-huh. So wherever the fish are biting,
you're going along.
That's where I'll go.
Yeah.
If it's not too hot and it's good weather and it's...
And you don't have to wait too long between bites.
And he didn't leave too early.
It gets hot
in the morning.
Like, how early is too early?
For me?
Yeah.
I'd say before 5 is
pushing.
Yeah, that's
kind of early. That's like John goes hunting, and I'm like, yeah,
he
goes, you want to go?
3:30, yep. And that's just not what I enjoy. When we first started fishing, I would go with him every time. But we'd start at 3:30, 4, and then he wouldn't want to get off the water till the sunset.
Oh, no. John, yeah. You love
well,
it.
Well, I know, and I do.
He burned me out. And so I'm like, I think I have some other interests.
Yeah. I'm going to go hike in Spain. Yeah,
exactly.
I think as far as water things, Becky's thing would be more like going out to beautiful places to take pictures or paint.
And absorb it. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. I like Big Lake. We've gone there a few times. My husband is from Lake Charles, and I'd heard of Big Lake, but only in the past maybe 10 years did we go fishing. And there's... That's really a closed destination. Beautiful.
It's really close.
We went July 4th 1 year, and they have a celebration, and the fishing was excellent.
Hmm. Yeah, we're disappointed that when we lived there, because we lived there 5 years after we got married.
On Big Lake?
We lived in Lake Charles, and then mm-hmm. we lived in Sulphur. But, I mean, it's just right there.
It is.
And we never went and
oh, it's beautiful.
Fish there.
For people that want to go do a, you know, you can get a guided tour, like you're mm-hmm. saying. Mm-hmm. So if... what other types of things do you do? Because I want to get into going back to your website, but people can contact you to go fishing. Right. What other types of things do you enjoy bringing people out to experience about our region?
Well, you know, taking general paddle trips is a big thing. That's probably our biggest thing. That's the most number of trips that we do is just a paddle tour, whether it's on the Tesh or there's
nice.
Some... special
Lake
spots.
Lake Martin's gorgeous.
Lake Foss
yeah.
Point, the Atchafalaya Basin, all the coastal swamps that mm-hmm. we have here that are just perfect for going out on a paddle trip.
So we just call Pack and Paddle or go on your website, packandpaddle.com, and you can set up an event or do you
yeah,
need a group?
You can, what I would recommend, a lot of the trips actually do fill up pretty early, so I like to recommend people get on our email list. They find out ahead of time. Go ahead mm-hmm. and sign up. Don't worry if the weather's bad. We'll postpone.
So you're not out.
Make you go. Uh-huh. Yeah. But you know, if you wait too late, the trips are probably going to be full. So I like to tell people to go ahead and get on the two things. Get on our email list, mm-hmm. which you can sign up on the website.
I saw that when you go to the website, it invites
yeah.
you, and it's easy.
Mm-hmm. Or follow us on Facebook because all our events are on Facebook as well.
Okay. So what are most people that are tourists, like, you know, really tourists, what do they like to do when they come in? I guess they first have to get acclimated to the heat. But
right.
what do they like to do? Is biking popular or do they prefer the water?
No, I think the paddle thing is the best. Why don't you tell them about the photo tours? Because that's a thing that has been a big, that people have come from out of town, the photography tours.
On the swamps or something?
Yeah, no, we have, one thing that we've seen in the last couple of years is that people are coming here to take photographs of the cypress trees.
Oh.
And
where would they do that, John?
Becky's like not clued
Lake
into
Martin
this.
Or the
yeah. Well, Lake Chafalaya. Martin. Lake Martin's an awesome destination because... Not only do you have the trees, but you have the bird. The bird photography is phenomenal
but
there.
But they also have alligators, huh?
What's that?
Alligators.
Alligators,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it started with George Popp, right?
Right. Where this started, there's a really noted landscape photographer from Austria who came to Louisiana because there was going to be this big exposition in Europe mm-hmm. called Forest of the World. And he had the idea that he wanted to photograph the cypress trees in Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
And so
you have to be on the water to really capture.
Right. That. And so he came across Lake Foss Point.
Uh-huh.
Not the state park, the lake itself.
Where is it?
The lake Foss Point
it's past the park, right?
Correct. It's about 8 miles south of the park. But in that area there's a large number of original trees. One of the problems that we have that exists in the basin is that in the early 1900s, virtually every cypress tree in the entire coastal plain was cut.
Cut? And
yes.
Why?
Everything was logged. Well, they
the wood.
Houses.
To sell it? Oh my gosh.
But it was clear cut.
Oh.
Yeah, it was clear cut because cypress is an awesome wood.
It is.
It doesn't rot. It's insect resistant. There's a lot of reasons that it's a great wood, but they cut. So what's happened is most of the cypress are second growth cypress, which mm-hmm. are now 100 to 150 years old. Now, the original cypress, by comparison, can be over 1,000 years old or 1,500 years old.
They're some, like the redwoods.
Right. Wow. And the bases of these trees would be twice the size of this room that we're sitting in right
now.
And the only trees that were left when the basin was logged were the trees that did not have a commercial value. So what that means is they were either hollow or mm-hmm. had something going on with them where they didn't think it was worth it to cut them down. So there's a bunch of these trees on the edge of on the north shore and as well on the south shore of Lake Foss Point that were not logged. And since then the water has sort of come up around them. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether the land sunk, you know, how we've had the land has receded in a lot of areas. So now you can paddle through a lot of these giant trees that might be, I don't know, 15 to 18 feet in diameter.
Oh my gosh.
And they are only 50, 60 feet tall, and they're all stunted like bonsai trees. So it's just an incredible landscape.
So he came to capture that.
He came to capture it, and he spent a month here in November, and he ended up winning this huge prize in Europe with his photographs.
In November 2017?
No, he did this. This was back probably about five or six years ago.
Uh-huh.
And
but there's probably not many of these in the world.
No, there's hardly any places like this. And so what's happened since then is that now amateur photographers and professionals mm-hmm. come here specifically to shoot this area.
And you'll take them on guided tours?
We can take them. We rent boats to them, or we'll show them where to go, or we can take them.
That sounds like a great day. You know, if you're just traveling and want to see something uniquely Louisiana.
Right. It is.
I haven't heard of that.
Right.
So you've got the guided boat tours. You've got the fishing. I know there's a lot of other things that y'all focus on. We were talking about hiking, Becky. Y'all take people out on guided hikes, is that correct? I mean, where do people like to go? What are some of the highlights in this area?
Well, the most popular hike that we do is, we call it the waterfall hike. It's actually in Mississippi, though. Mm-hmm. Clark Creek, north of Baton Rouge. Uh-huh. There's clay banks that have eroded away and have led to waterfalls. And it's a beautiful hiking trail in and out of the water.
How long is that? Do you know the...
Well, there's different routes you can take. I'd say anywhere from a few miles to probably six.
Mm-hmm. You do a day trip from here?
And we do that at least monthly.
Uh-huh. What other places? I know we've gone up to Chico State Park with children. It seems like that's kind of an easier...
The Wild Azalea Trail up near Alexandria.
Beautiful. Yeah. So people gather in Lafayette to go? Like, do you have a bus kind of tour?
We don't have a bus. We'll carpool.
Caravan,
And there's not a ton of hiking right in this area. There's some short mm-hmm. trails at the nature station.
Yeah, that right here in Lafayette.
Acadiana Park. But we don't generally lead trips there. We might have had a parent-child hike there. Mm-hmm. But it's more like a self-guided hike.
What about biking? I know there's a lot of trail events that Scott Schilling has started and others. Are y'all involved in the biking?
We haven't been involved in the biking events as much. We've been focusing on paddling and hiking.
What year did Pack and Paddle get out of bicycles?
Oh, 98 maybe.
98.
So you don't sell bikes?
No, we don't.
It's really more the outdoor.
Yeah. But it's great, the stuff that Scott's doing.
Yeah, he really has taken that on.
Yeah. It's really awesome. And
the Cycle Zydeco is actually something his mother started.
Yeah. I thought she had been involved in that. Scott lives it like y'all do. I mean, he really lives to get people to celebrate this whole region. Yeah. So, so for the things y'all do people have to be in shape? Like, is this something that people have to work up to be able to go kayak or... Mm-hmm. You know,
not our trips. No,
like you can be not a slug, but I mean, can you just
you
be a regular
be a slug,
person?
It's okay. It's not. I mean, we actually do rate our trips: level one, level two, level three.
Like, so if you're older or you have grandchildren or children,
you may not want to go on a level three hike or a level three paddle. And it explains what it is. And most of the time, as far as paddling, it's how much will you have to be paddling?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be on the water. Like a level one trip might be two. might be 1.5 to 2 hours of paddling.
Okay.
A level, but a level three trip, you may have to be literally paddling for 4 to 5 hours. So you need to be prepared to be doing that for that amount of time.
You're not going to tie a rope on their kayak and pull them, John?
Well, we do what we have to do to get people home, Jen.
There's been times when John and I, in a two-person boat, we might, okay, this guy's going to ride with me, and they're going to ride with you.
We'll pick that kayak up later.
Yeah. No, we get people out alive. That's our goal, for sure.
Yeah.
But, it's...
You don't have to be in excellent shape for any of them.
I just would think every day would be an adventure when people show up, because you don't have to check them out. They just show up.
I think we have an Eagle paddle, which is a beautiful paddle. When the Southern Eagles, migrate through, we have a place down near Morgan City.
Oh, how beautiful.
And we see bald eagles all the time, but... one trip, this family shows up, and there's, I think, five of them, and one of them is an old man. And basically had
to pick him
somebody
up
on either side. Mm-hmm. How old was he, John?
I think he was 85.
Well,
and so we're
still
like,
breathing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Hmm.
I know.
Okay,
it's
so John said, he can get in my boat.
Yeah. And just in case.
And so we put him in the front of my boat, and I just paddled him around the whole day.
He had fun about it.
Oh, he loved it. I don't know if he'd ever seen a bald eagle in the wild, and he did get to see one.
Right, right. Do you have many children? Do people sign up many children for events?
You know what we do for our events, it's not really focused on kids, but we say we set the age limit at 12 unless you call us and talk to us about it. I mean, there's plenty of younger kids who can do these trips, but we'd rather talk to you about it before you bring them on the trip, just to make sure that it's mostly about being in the boat and staying focused and engage with it for a certain amount of time.
Right. What's the best time of year for people to be outdoors here in this region? Do you have a favorite time of year, or maybe twice a year?
I think, I'll say my favorite, but my favorite time is any time between probably December 1st and May 1st.
You like the cooler weather.
Yeah, absolutely.
What about you, Becky?
I would say the same thing. I don't know if it might be a little earlier than December 1st. The cypress trees actually become beautiful. It has a fall color to it. They turn kind of a reddish color, and I love paddling through the cypress swamps.
So November, you like?
It depends on what the weather's been, whether it's November or December.
Yeah.
And
I love March. It seems like it's Easter, but it's just cool. It's still cool, but you can see some green.
Every season has its beauty. In the summer, the noises are incredible, especially in the evening, just the frogs and the birds. And, at Lake Martin with the birds building their nests. But it is hot. You wouldn't want to go out in the middle of the day.
But, it could
be hot. We'll plan our trips later or earlier.
You never know here. It could be hot in December. We live in Louisiana.
Yep.
And I really wouldn't live anywhere else. I wouldn't. Mm. My sister's up in Minneapolis, and I think, out of all the places in the country, I think we're very blessed to be here in South Louisiana.
Yep,
the people and the scenery. There's a lot to see here.
It's a very unique ecosystem for the country.
Yeah, yeah. I want to ask, where do you see your business 10, 15, 20 years from now? John and I, Becky, have had conversations. I was involved in the I-49, the connector project, and the thruway's been kind of languishing for decades. And y'all are really, you could almost just throw me or throw Becky, John, from your place. You're right by the thruway. And we don't know where or when the connector will ever happen, but where do you see yourself down the line as you look to your own retirement with the business?
Great question. Right now we're focusing on enjoying the business and letting some of our staff grow in their roles to be able to run the business. And
they're very attentive
and staying involved. And where will Pack and Paddle be? I don't know. Who'd have thought that? Who'd have thought 8 years ago people would just be buying stuff on their phone? And
I know, without even looking at it.
I
like to look at things and feel them.
I don't know where retail would be. Nobody really can predict that. And I think that that what we have to do is stay focused on being important to certain people, which means people who want to connect with the outdoors mm-hmm. or connect with other people by using the outdoors to connect with each other, and Pack and Paddle being kind of a catalyst for that.
Yeah.
And if we can do that, and if people still think it's important to want to buy something locally, mm-hmm. which I can't, you know, that we can't predict.
Right.
Then Pack and Paddle will be here, and we'll be doing it. We'll never move because that building is so unique and mm-hmm. has so much history. And
it really is beautiful too. It's
and the way the codes are now, you could never build that building again.
I mean, not for affordable price.
You couldn't build it. I don't think you can build a commercial building with that much wood on the walls anymore. So
you're grandfathered in though. Like
oh, yeah,
as long as you don't remodel.
There's so much grandfathered in stuff in that building. It's crazy. Becky's saying, "Don't say that."
Yeah, shush.
but anyway, Pack and Paddle is as far as I-49. That is so hard because
it's all over the place.
It's all over the place. So I feel like if it happened, if they were constructing I-49 in front of Pack and Paddle, it would kind of be hard for Pack and Paddle.
Mm-hmm. Because you're right there.
Yeah, it's right. already so convenient to pick up your phone and just buy something on your phone. Mm-hmm. Well, now if people have to struggle through construction zone to get there, it just makes it one step harder. So, you know, I'm worried about that. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether that's reality or not. I'm like, they've changed. I don't know where the exits are anymore. They keep changing
them. They keep on changing it. And I stopped while I was on the connector committee, and things would change based on input and then based on environmental concerns. But you really are. Your location is right.
We're
at
exposed
the three-way.
We are going to be exposed to our business being hurt by whatever happens with that. And we haven't been able to predict what will happen.
It's probably no rush the way things look, but it will be an issue at some point.
It could be an issue at some point. And
could you run this business, though, strictly internet? Could it be something where you have a base of operation, you know, where you're based out of, mm-hmm. but where it's more internet-driven for people, for tours?
Could we? Yeah. Mm-hmm. If we were focusing on tours. I mean, tours is still that's not how we make our living. We make our living selling.
You need retail sales.
Packs and kayaks and shoes and clothing. Mm-hmm. That's how we make our living. Our trips are almost a service to Lafayette because we probably don't even take in enough money every year on that to cover the expenses that we go to put them on.
It's probably hard to charge what it really costs for people to buy it.
That's not how we make our living, but it sets us apart and makes Pack and Paddle different.
Mm-hmm.
So,
what do you think, Becky, 10, 20 years from now? Do you think about that?
I think about it. With I-49, I wish something would happen.
Yeah, I do too. Just a decision.
It's not
even just funding. I think it's community.
Yeah.
There's not enough people that are willing to stand up and say, we want it or we don't want it. It's just been in limbo for so long. But I thought this time there'd be more movement, and I know for you it matters. I mean, you're directly affected, just as other businesses are up and down the thruway. But
until it's decided, I think there's empty buildings. I mean, it's going.
It's limbo.
If it was moved, I think things would happen and improve near us.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Well, the worst part is probably the non-decision, and like Becky said, there's empty buildings, and people don't want to invest there because they don't know what's going to happen with I-49.
Right.
And so that's the biggest negative to the area is the unsurety of what's going to happen.
Well, nobody's going to go borrow money, like you wouldn't do that. Like you're saying, it would cost so much to try to improve. And, you know, the community, I think, for people that are against it, they're very sincere. So many other people know that nothing will happen until the thruway is upgraded. But
well, sooner or later, something has to happen.
Yeah.
This thing...
It's been a long time.
They're completing it. You look at all the overpasses south of us that are being completed. And everything's finished north. So we're the final stand. It's going to happen.
Right.
It's just a matter of when. And I'm 57 years old, so maybe it won't matter to me.
Well, you've got some time.
And, if the corridor is protected, I think, and if we can survive a business slowdown, I think it could be a great thing mm-hmm. for Pack and Paddle.
Oh, I think so, for a tourist destination, for people actually driving, as we say, from Canada, mm-hmm. driving to New Orleans. I think it'll be a lot easier for people to look at that mm-hmm. as a route. I know for us, we live near you. We live mm-hmm. By the oil center. And when we go to New Orleans now, we head south through Houma, Thibodaux. I never used to do that, but it's so much easier than going through Baton Rouge.
Yes.
So I think it would be a big boon for our community. I just want to make sure in my own heart that local businesses like yours that have invested not just time and money, but really your heart mm-hmm. into the community that you're protected. So, well, yeah.
We hope so, too.
Have I not asked what y'all would want to speak about? Is there anything big coming up this fall or summer that you'd like to tell people about?
Let's see. This summer, we have a little bit less trips in the heat of the summer, mm-hmm. but we do have a movie coming up where, you know, the Cane Fire film series?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're coordinating with them, and we're actually bringing a film to Pack and Paddle. Because part of, which you know, because we did the meeting there, but
yeah.
part of Pack and Paddle converts into a venue.
It's a great meeting space.
Yeah. Thanks. And we're doing a film, a Camino film. And it's it looks really interesting, but we're doing it with them. And
is there a date?
Yeah, there is a date. I'd have to look it
up. Well, we
on
can
the
go
website.
To packandpaddle.com and yeah. probably
and it's,
find
it's
that.
In the, it's in late June.
Okay. And I'll get that from y'all. I'll put it in the show notes. So.
Okay. Cool.
And Jason Sikora is here taping this for us. Sometimes Jason will think of questions that I haven't asked.
I could do a whole podcast just by myself. I have enough questions.
Isn't this great?
First of all, thank you for being here. I love your store. And Raider Solutions loves your store. Typically, I don't know if you know this, but Chris Raider and Jacob Landry, when it comes to putting together like, the employee Christmas packages, usually stops at Pack and Paddle first. So you guys are responsible for my GoPro, for my Hydro Flask, maybe even our drones. I don't know.
So
thank you very much. I've rented from you guys plenty of times, and I have to say you have some of the nicest staff in all of Lafayette.
They're
always so helpful, like almost too helpful. Like you can go back to your job. Like I got this, but no, they're always so nice. And I always walk away every time saying, man, that guy was so nice. He was just so helpful.
That's great.
The trips that you guys do you allow pets?
We actually don't do pets.
Okay.
However, about a couple times a year, we'll do a trip that we will say is a pet-friendly trip.
Okay.
And it's something we get asked all the time, and I would love to allow pets, mm-hmm. but the problem is we can't figure out which pets are okay to have on
yeah.
the trip and which aren't. So
yeah, well, insurance might get weird at that point, too. And
it could. I guess it
and
could.
And they get overheated, too.
I think it would be more like if the dog was barking or,
yeah.
you know, whatever.
But you want to bring your chickens?
I wouldn't bring my chickens. Well, I have two labs, and so you mentioned Clark Creek, and
right.
they
yeah.
love, I mean, labs and Clark Creek, that's it's a
yeah.
match made in heaven. What's your favorite place to hike or backpack in Louisiana?
Okay, as far as hiking or backpacking. Okay, so
Becky how about both? I mean,
Becky already mentioned Clark Creek, which I would say is one of the better, probably the two best hikes is going to be Clark Creek, in my opinion.
Okay.
And then during the winter, there's a trail in Kissatchee called the Backbone Trail.
I don't know that one.
Yeah. The Backbone Trail is, it's a couple hours from here, but it's in the red dirt section of Kissatchee.
Okay.
And it's a beautiful trail. It's one of the few places in Louisiana that you're going to go and actually see rocks.
Oh, gosh.
And it's got some elevation, some up and down, and a lot of the longleaf pines that Kissatchee is known for. So that's a great backpacking trip. It can be a day hike. It's like, mm-hmm. I think, 7 miles. Or
okay.
you can, it connects with the Caroline Dorman Trail, which is about 15 miles and goes all the way to Kissatchee Bayou. So you can connect the Backbone Trail and the Caroline Dorman Trail and do about a 20-mile hike from the Backbone Trailhead all the way to Kissatchee Bayou.
Okay.
And by the way, one of the best places to take your dog to go hiking besides Clark Creek would be Kissatchee Bayou, and that's up in Kissatchee, and the there's a campground there. It's a walk-in campground,
mm-hmm.
and you pay a little bit, a few dollars. You know, you pay a little bit. You don't park at your site like you do at Chico, so you have to be ready to kind of carry your stuff. It's not like a backpacking trip,
mm-hmm.
but You can walk along the Carolyn Dorman Trail next to Kisatchie Bayou, which is more like, sort of like Whiskey Chitta with the sand bottom and the clear water.
Yep.
Great place to take your dogs.
Okay.
And you can hike along there, and dogs can run and jump in the water and have fun.
Okay. And they could make that length. They could hang for that.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, we've done the Kincaid Loop, and we'll go walk 5 miles and then sleep overnight and then do the rest of the next day. And that's also one of the favorite of the ESA Outing Club. They love doing that Kincaid Loop.
Oh, okay.
And then they, right at the end, there's that tiny little peninsula. It's kind of sandy, and you can sleep there overnight.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, that's a good one. Finally, and what's the hardest part about owning a special retail store? Or what's something that most people don't know about owning a specialty retail store?
Oh, that's a good question. What is the hardest part about owning a specialty retail store? You know, I don't know. What do you think, Beck?
I mean, do you have a background in business, or you just kind of grew up with it? Okay.
No, I grew up with it, but I also have a degree in business from UL.
Okay.
Or USL, I should say. But
Marketing has had to change. I know. I looked online on Facebook, and I saw y'all had some really fun videos about sale items, and you have your young staff talking about things. But marketing has really changed.
What I think is, I don't, you know, to me, business is business. So, what's hard about being in specialty retail is probably that there's a lot of things that are sort of stacked against you right now, meaning access to instant access to a zillion different products at any time at the touch of a button that's something that you have to overcome. And it's something that we work hard to overcome every day in a lot of ways. And part of it is what you mentioned, staff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hiring good staff, keeping good staff, training good staff. And that, you know, I think if I get any comment from people most consistently, it's about our staff and how great our staff is. And if we didn't have good staff, we wouldn't be here. And I think that, it's not hard to keep a good staff, but it's something that you have to work at and you have to have as a priority.
Right.
And I think that it's not just Becky and I. In fact, we have a manager, Scott Bienvenu, that does a fantastic job of choosing our staff, training our staff.
Right.
And then the other thing that I think is, I don't call it hard, but something you have to work at, is that you have to pick your direction well. So
that makes sense.
Meaning, and that means a lot of ways. It means, okay, we're not going to sell on the internet. Well, that most people would go, what? That's not smart. 2018, you're not selling the internet? No, we're not, because we're focused on people. We're focused on good staff. We're focused on buying things that work here for people who live here that want to shop with us.
Mm-hmm.
And then picking your direction could mean you're buying. And We put a lot of thought and effort, Becky, along with Amy Dupuy, who's worked for us for over 10 years, spend tremendous amounts of time trying to figure out, you know, all this stuff is in the store and it's really fun to look at. Well, how did that stuff get there? Well, someone had to go to a show and look through about 20 times more stuff than you're seeing to pick the things that work best.
What will people like 6 months from
20,000 more things.
Oh my gosh. I mean, picking the things that are going to work and having that be right. So when you walk in the store and you wanted to buy a pack, okay, maybe we don't have the pack you were thinking, but wait, we have this pack. And what about the, oh, well, you know what? This is even better than what I was thinking. So you buy the pack.
Yeah, that I think is the hardest thing is people come in, they don't say, I'd like a hiking boot. They come in and say, I want this hiking boot. And there's thousands of different hiking boots that we could have bought, and we can't carry 1,000 different hiking boots. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to curate the selection to the area.
Right.
To what we feel like our customers would want the most.
Right. And don't take it wrong, but like, I think this is true. A lot of people in South Louisiana have wide feet. So, you know, our selection, believe it or not, leans toward boots that have wider fits.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, so we've thought through what we're carrying to that level.
That's a sturdy foot, though.
It is a sturdy
firm
foot.
Plant.
It's like flippers.
And you stay on top of the marsh really well.
Well, you know, and I'm thinking, too, in the day of instant gratification and free shipping and all this, I don't want my boots shipped for free. I want to make sure they fit my foot. no matter how wide my foot is, you know, and make sure that when I'm going hiking or if I'm going off somewhere that I'm going to be comfortable and not miserable because I've got blisters and the choice I made on the internet wasn't the right choice for me. So I think that experience and customer service is really valuable in your industry in particular for safety and for fun, you know, to make things fun.
Yeah, and I think so. And I think, you know, we have to be realists. We don't feel like even our friends are going to buy things on the internet. I mean, that's reality.
Right.
And that's okay. But what we need to make sure we're doing is having the things that work well for our area, knowing how to represent them well to the customer, being a good partner for our vendors, and just trying to run a business the right way so that we can last in the long haul.
Yeah. Well, I think after 44 years in business, Pack and Paddle will
hopefully
be around a long time. I think that shows the commitment that the Williams family has to Lafayette.
I think it also shows something about Lafayette, because you can go to lots of communities all over the place that really don't support local stuff. There's towns where you can go and you can't find a local restaurant. You can't find hardly find a local business. And I know, you know, that sounds funny, but go look at certain towns. Lafayette supports local businesses better than a lot of towns that I've seen. And I mean, I do think, you know, there's hard work and luck and skill and all that and staying in business. Mm-hmm. And there's also the fact that Lafayette has supported Pack and Paddle for 44 years. And
that's great.
That's
John,
a really big deal.
Thank you, Lafayette.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks to the Williams for what you've done to bring the outdoors to all of us and for being in business so many years. It's a commitment. And I'm grateful to have both John and Becky Williams on Discover Lafayette today. I'd also like to thank Jason Sikora with Raider Solutions for taping this episode, and thank you for listening. This episode and all of our episodes can be found online at discoverlafayette.net. We're on iTunes and anywhere that you get your podcasts. Thank you for listening. With another episode of Discover Lafayette, this is Jan Swift.